But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning, welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shaudell, and I'm here with co-host and producer Stu Schrager, as usual. Hey, Stu.
Good morning, Tom.
What's happening?
I'm just so exuberant because I haven't been here for a week.
Yeah, where'd you go?
I did a quick trip down to Florida.
Did you really? Yeah.
Yes, and we'll have to talk about the dining sensation when we get the opportunity.
Yeah, that's your second home, Florida, right?
Pretty much so, yes.
Yeah, you go down there a lot. Yeah, I'm going to head down there sometime in January, I think, play golf with a friend of mine. But I'm going to over by the West Coast, over north, you know, by what's that city that begins with a P over there?
Pensacola,
yeah. Got to fly into Pensacola and play golf at Sandestin. But, you know, I wasn't really thinking when I made these reservations. Northern Florida can get pretty chilly in January. So I may have screwed up, you know, because some.
I must be lucky then, because it was 80-something degrees each day we were there.
Well, yeah, well, it's not January yet, but, you know, no. Where are you? West Palm, right?
West Palm, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's always pretty warm. You know, you get below that certain line, you know, you're pretty much guaranteed weather. So you had some good dining experiences down there?
I did. It was it was really a jam-packed weekend. Got down there, met a couple down in Palm Beach Gardens.
Uh-huh.
A pizzeria al fresco, and it was it taught me that you have to go into, you have to really take a deep breath in life and not be a negative soul. Because I said, why do they want to go to a pizzeria?
Yeah.
I don't get it. And I looked at the menu. I didn't delve deep into it, but, you know, it looked like a pizza place.
Yeah.
Just as far as entrees or whatever.
Right.
But I have to say I was wrong. Palm Beach Gardens is an interesting area. Or Palm Beach.
It was
like literally around the corner from Mar-a-Lago.
Uh-huh.
The homes there are crazy.
Yeah,
crazy, crazy, crazy. But so we went, found the restaurant, and it was in the courtyard, which was pretty cool. And you sat outside. But at that, I need to ask you the question. As a restaurateur, and if you had an outdoor situation,
right,
how do you deal with weather? And then I'll give my critique of the restaurant.
Well, you either get a covering, and then you don't have to worry about it, or it's, you know, you live and die by the forecast. I mean, it's not much you can do about it. You know, we have an open area in Lour. You know, I have an area that's covered, you know, with a tent, and I have an area that's open, and you know, it's great when it's sunny. It's not good when it's raining, you know. And it's funny because people will always go, I want to sit outside. And you warn them, you know, okay. But, you know, the forecast is a little iffy. And I've had nights where everybody's standing in the bar with their plate in their hand, you know, because it's pouring out, you know, waiting for it to pass. So it's a difficult call, you know. The great thing is that if you have the outside, and you know, weather in Florida is, I mean, rains like once a day down there, you know, just in case, you know. So you always have that half hour or so where it's a little bit, you know, iffy as far as the weather goes. You know? You just have to deal with it as it comes. I mean, there's not much else you can do. You know, a lot of those tables will have umbrellas, you know, outside just in case.
I'm trying to think. There were some tables, I believe, with a with an umbrella.
Uh-huh.
Part of the restaurant was inside, of course.
Yeah.
But it was drizzling when we were getting there, and I was a little concerned. What was really interesting, though, is I thought the menu was really good. It's funny. Kerry is not a salmon eater.
Right.
She's trying to lead her daughter onto a healthier eating platform.
Right.
So she's more open-minded at the moment. And lo and behold, one of the things she chose was salmon. And it was prepared. Oh, there we go. bear with me here.
Now, what was the name of this place?
Pizzeria Alfresco. Pizzeria Alfresco.
Hmm. I don't know.
But the salmon was roasted salmon, and this was intriguing, with a honey citrus sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet potato mash and string beans.
Okay.
And it was just perfect. The the tang of the and the sweetness of the sauce on the salmon was in, was really nice. I don't like string beans when they're very
hard.
Yeah. So these were just perfect. They weren't mushy, but they were just perfect.
I always go back and forth between that al dente thing and you know some chefs believe that vegetables should be crispy and almost not cooked. But then you go to Italy and they stew green beans and tomato until they're really soft. I kind of like it that way, you know.
Although Tom and I, you weren't together with me, my mind was with you as I looked at the Hawaiiana pie, which was tomato sauce, mozzarella, pineapple, and diced sweet ham. I have to admit, I did not go for that, though.
No, that's crimes against humanity is what it is. I mean, it's just, I don't know. Pineapple on pizza to me is just waste of pineapple. Excuse me.
And then we had something, cannelloni fiorentina, which was fresh pasta filled with veal, spinach, vodka sauce, and Parmigiano.
Yeah, they're like little crepes, and they're stuffed.
That's what it was.
Yeah, see that?
So that was really nice. And I guess we must have had a dessert. But it was we didn't have dessert. We had some what's the fancy ice cream? Italian?
Gelato. Yeah.
We found the gelato stand.
Shop, yeah.
Shop, and we partook.
Partook. Past tense.
So, and then the rest of the weekend just sailed by. We went to a friend's son who's in high school, is in a creative arts school. So they had a Broadway-like performance of Mamma Mia, which was phenomenal. Really, kudos to the kids there because it made any community theater compared to it. It was really incredible. And then we had the highlight of the weekend, which was a surprise party for our friends, but it was a Barbie theme since it was sort of Halloweenish.
Don't tell me you had a Ken wig on.
No, but somebody did. But the husband of the wife who was throwing the party forgot to tell us what we couldn't wear. So Carrie and I went as cowboy Barbie and Ken, and she had a pink outfit with a white hat. I had a black outfit with a white hat and a pink thing
polo
around my
tie,
neck.
Yeah.
And but lo and behold, our friend who's a brunette comes in a pink outfit with a blonde wig and looked like Carrie.
Really?
And then the guy comes in with the black shirt and black pants and had my outfit.
A party of four.
So, but it was really cool. And then the next day, we actually went to Jupiter, which I think it's sort of near.
Yeah, yeah. A little north.
PGA area.
Yeah, PGA National, yeah. It's about 15 minutes north.
And we went to a Lessing's property.
Which one?
Well, apparently they have the Pelican Club.
Right.
And then they have a couple of Joe Namath restaurants. This was a rooftop dining area overlooking, I guess, one of the canals or
right, yeah.
whatever. And I have to look up the name, but it was incredible. It just, it was funny, though. And as a restaurateur, you could appreciate this. So I guess it was going to be 10 of us. My friend wanted to make a reservation, and they said, oh, no, on Sundays you have to put a deposit of $600 down.
Nice.
So they were resistant to do that for whatever. So I had a connection to the Lessings up here, so
yeah.
They did me a favor. They took the reservation, but the girl was quick to say, you know, you're going to spend $600 anyway, so what does it really matter? But we get there at noon. And that was when the restaurant opened, and by 12:20, we were still standing at the bottom of the steps. They forgot to lift the sign.
Oh, really? Oh, no.
So, but we get up there, and, you know, again, it was sparsely populated. So I thought it was pretty funny that you had to make the reservation or whatever, because we could have had the whole top deck over there.
Sure.
But the food was great. The presentation was really cool. Really nice drinks. They were very cordial, and they sent over a bottle of champagne for us.
Nice.
But it was really cool. It was anything from French toast to some other items, breakfast sandwiches, et cetera. But it was just really nice to be out in Florida in the sun or whatever.
Yeah, it's funny with Lessing's, you know, they're a good company. I mean, they do a lot of catering places here in Long Island. A friend of mine just got married at Coe Hall. What was it called? Not Coe Hall. Yeah. What's the one in Huntington? Is it Coe Hall? No, Coe Hall is the Arboretum.
There's a couple of nice restaurants out east, and they were at the Taste of Island Harvest's Taste of the Harvest.
Condren Hall.
And they had a couple of the restaurants. They had really nice stuff. I met the guy from the Nissaquag Club.
Oh, yeah.
Who is a big fan of yours, the chef out there.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes, who doesn't know Tom Shordell?
Hey, you know, it was funny because I ate in a place in Jupiter that maybe it was the same place. It was it's in like a shopping mall, right? Kind of like a bunch of restaurants there.
Yes.
Yeah, and I can't remember the name of it either. But it was really good, and they had a chef who was doing really interesting things. And their places up here are more pub-like. You know, I guess the view isn't, you know, it's like seafood. But, you know, if you go to a place like the Library Cafe in Farmingdale and stuff, or is that in Babylon? I can't remember which one now. Oh, Post Office Cafe is in Babylon. I think the Library Cafe is in Farmingdale. They're more pub-style menus that are kind of, you know, more simple. The Lessing's property I was in down in Florida, which I can't remember the name, was really good. I mean, it was, you know, it was interesting. It was, the food was well thought out. Chef had a lot of talent. I actually ate there twice because it was so good. And I met...
The Landing Rooftop is where I was.
The Landing, yeah. Maybe that was it. I don't remember. But anyway, they do a good job. I mean, that Condry Hall thing in Huntington where my friend got married, it was decent, you know. I mean, for catering, it's... You know, catering, you always have one eye up, you know. And I had gone to two weddings right in a row. My niece got married at a place, Piermont, you know, in Babylon. It used to be John Anthony's right there on the water. What a beautiful spot. You know, they have all windows overlooking the bay. You know, it was really nice. They did a good job with the food. You know, the entrees were kind of, you know, sort of standard fare. But it was the cocktail hour was very cool. Had a whole bunch of stations and stuff, so... I've been getting around, but mostly for catering things. I went to, did I tell you I went to Oya?
Update, it was Topside at the Beacon.
Topside at the Beacon, okay.
Which was Love Street in Jupiter.
All right. So did I tell you I went to Oya?
Yes, and somebody I was talking to says that they love hearing you talk about that restaurant.
Really? Well, maybe I'll do it now. But what's going, you know... Yeah. I'm so torn on talking about this because I think that here's my thought about what's going on in the restaurant business. You know, everybody's saying restaurants are expensive now, they're overpriced, and like I'm sympathetic to the restaurants because I know what the stuff costs and I know what the, you know, help costs and, you know, and it's getting out of control. But I'm beginning to believe that the model restaurant that we all know, you know, where you go in, you have waitress service and a runner brings the food to the table and you have busboys cleaning up and then you have dessert and you go home and you tip 20% or whatever. I don't think that model works anymore because it's getting so out of control, so expensive that, you know, even with the elevated prices, nobody seems to be making any money. And restaurants are going out all the time. Diners are closing. It's really getting kind of scary out there. But if you watch what some people are doing now, some of these more highly trained chefs are opening up burger bars, they're opening up taco stands, they're opening up these little tasting counters, you know, and that kind of works. And Oya is almost like a hybrid of the two. Oya is a sushi restaurant that I believe is maybe the best sushi restaurant in the country, and it's run by an American and his wife, Tim and Nancy Cushman. She's kind of a sake sommelier, and he's a very talented chef. I know he worked in Japan for a while. But his sushi is different than everybody else's. I mean, he does a lot of different toppings and things, and it's not like you see here with mango purees and silly stuff like that. It's really well thought out, interesting things. But the deal is now that he basically, he's on TOC, which is a reservation system. So if you want to go there, let's say what's today, the 2nd or the 3rd, if you want to go there on let's say a month, you have to make 30 days in advance. You have to call the reservation. So if you call today, you can get a reservation for December 3rd. All right, and then tomorrow you'd have to call for December 4th. And they fill up pretty quickly. But it's $300 a person for the omakase, which is 23 courses. And then they charge a 20% gratuity or a service charge, whatever they want to call it, right off the bat. So you're already in for two people. You're already in for 600 plus, 120. So you're in for 720, right? And somehow I managed to spend $800 on upgrades between wine and they had a truffle edition, they had a caviar edition, whatever, you know. But it was my daughter's 40th birthday, so we went nuts. But so I was north of $1,600 for two people.
Wow.
Now, that's kind of the outside envelope, I'm sure. But, you know, the place was full, and it probably had 40 people in there, 40, 45 people. And I got to believe the check average is $400. So you're at 16, 17 grand, 18,000, whatever that math is, you know, for, I guess we went up on a Wednesday night. That's a pretty good night, you know. So I think what's happening now, it's either that, you know, you go crazy expensive in a city where, you know, you have a lot of people and a lot of disposable income, or you go the other way and you go like burgers and tacos, you know, where you don't have to have a lot of highly trained people in the kitchen and a lot of people work it. You know, there's a place out in, that I was at, what the hell is it called? It'll come to me, but it's in Akabak in Jamesport.
Yes.
And it's a place you go in, there's no wait staff. You go up, there's a counter there, and there's a kitchen behind the counter. And you go up and you basically tell them what you want. You give them the order. They bring it to the chefs. Bring it to the table. You know, so it cuts out all the extra help. You know, and I think people are starting to look at that because there's not a lot of money in the restaurant business anymore. So when I hear people say it's overpriced, it's, you know, it's expensive to eat out. It's expensive to eat in. You know, I mean, it's expensive. Period. You know, we're in this period of inflation, and you know. The world's all up, the whole world's upheaval, you know, is going on now. It's just, the whole thing's crazy. And it all happened within 2 years. How did all this happen within 2 or 3 years? It's nuts, right? But it did. It was the pandemic, and, you know, it just never really recovered. I think things are worse now than they were before for the restaurants because, at least during the pandemic, you had government money swirling around. You know, they were paying people to stay open or whatever. Now, that's drying up, and people are going, oh, you know, this has to come out of my bottom line here. So, you know, you see all kinds of closures going on. Although, I tell you, I was up in Poughkeepsie the other day, and I wound up in a diner, the Red Line Diner in Fishkill. After dinner, we went and we had a glass of wine at the diner, believe it or not. But they were packed. They were busy, you know. So hopefully that's a good sign. I know on Long Island, you know, a lot of diners are closing. You know, they've cut back their hours. They've, I can name probably five that are just not there anymore. It's sad what's going on in the restaurant business now. And I think it's affecting those places. You know, diners were always the place where you went. It would, you know, the food was abundant. It was fairly inexpensive, you know. But they can't do it anymore. You know, you can't pay people cash. You know, you can't, you know, buy, you know, like you used to buy. It's just everything's expensive. So if you go to a diner, I mean, their prices are comparable to restaurants now, and I think people were kind of rebelling against that to some degree, and the result is closures. You know, it's just tough. So I got to tell you, I went up to Poughkeepsie because I went to, I went to CIA when I was a kid,
mm-hmm.
and the first year, the school was still in New Haven, Connecticut. It was founded in New Haven, Connecticut, and it was a bunch of ramshackle buildings there that aren't there anymore. The main building is the Angel Hall is still there. And it's on Prospect Street in New Haven, if anybody knows the area. And now it's owned by Yale University. And so the second year, the campus moved locations to Hyde Park, New York, and it was an old monastery. And it was a big building, you know. I don't know how many square feet. It was tens of thousands of square feet. But now they have, you know, the campus has exploded. I mean, this is 50 years ago. Now they have restaurants, they have cafes, they got bakeries, they got a food almost like a food court, you know, for the students. That looks like Roosevelt Field.
Really?
They got swimming pools, movie stars, you know, basketball courts, workout rooms, a lake. You know, it's nuts, you know, dorms everywhere. And I think they're building a hotel across the street. So the school has really expanded. And that's probably why it's, you know, $60,000 a year now instead of $2,400 when I went. But So I met four of my roommates up there, three of my roommates, actually. It was four of us. Three of my roommates from college up there. And we went to dinner in the Bocuse, Paul Bocuse room, which used to be the Escoffier room. Now they have the American Bounty restaurant. They have Caterina de' Medici, which is their Italian restaurant. And they have Bocuse, which is the I guess the French style higher end restaurant. And I've gone to American Bounty a couple of times. The first time I went there was really good. The second time I went there was kind of mediocre. And I went to Bocuse this time. I wanted to try that. And it turns out they're doing a great job. The kids were good. You know, the kids were waiting on the table and opening the wine. And, you know, some of them were nervous and intimidated or whatever. But they got through it. And, you know, whoever the chef is there is, you know, the menu is very seasonal and very hip. You know, things are well executed. You know, I had Paul Bocuse's signature truffle soup. Comes out in like an onion soup crock. It's kind of like a chicken consomme with diced foie gras and chicken and black truffle and stuff. And what he does is he puts a piece of puff pastry on the top and bakes the soup in the oven so the puff pastry blows up. And it's a seal.
Sounds very cool.
It is cool. The problem is, you know, because the soup's in the oven, it goes in the crock hot, obviously, and it's in the oven for about 20 minutes, so it stays very hot, and it's got that covering on it, so it takes you 45 minutes to eat the soup because it's boiling hot when it comes out. So we had that, and then I had a lobster agnolotti, which was nice, you know, lobster stuffed like a ravioli, a nice crustacean bisque.
And what did you, andalotti?
Agnolotti.
And why not? Why is
andale is Spanish for hurry up.
Oh,
yeah, agnolotti is Italian for ravioli.
Gotcha.
But it's kind of like a moon shaped ravioli. Anyway, it was stuffed with lobster, which was real good, and it had some. It had like this crustacean bisque. You know, it was made with lobster, crab, and shrimp shells.
And what was it? The sauce. Let's call
it. Yeah, it was like a bisque. It was like a seafood bisque, a shellfish bisque. And then we had. An opera cake for dessert, which was kind of cool, which is like a, you know, it's like a chocolate moussey thing on an almond biscuit. It was very nice. And then my friends one had mussels, and I think they both had mussels. And then one guy had a steak, the other guy had a chicken dish, and both very, very well done and beautifully plated. And at the end, they had this pumpkin pot de creme, which was like a, it was an interesting take on it because pot au creme is like a pudding. So it was like a pumpkin pudding in the bottom and had this like cranberry mousse on top and some walnuts, candied walnuts and stuff. It was interesting. And they were making ice cream to order, you know, with the liquid nitrogen in the dining room.
Really?
It was fun. It was a fun trip, you know. We had a couple of bottles of wine and, you know, obviously a lot of laughs. So it's always a trip to go up there. I kind of miss that area. You know, Poughkeepsie is kind of the city itself. I can do without, but the area around it's beautiful. You know, you get the mountains up there and, you know, what's that, Rhinebeck? Have you ever been to Rhinebeck?
No.
A beautiful town, man. Gorgeous, you know, upstate New York-y kind of town. I just find it, you know, people are, you know, it's a little more rural up there. People kind of, you know, Poughkeepsie and Route 9 from Fishkill to Poughkeepsie has gotten really built up. It was like almost not a dirt road, but it was like a two-lane thing on either side. Now it looks like Sunrise Highway. There's restaurants and, you know, malls and everything else there. I guess, you know, time marches on. But it's always fun for me to go back there because I had such a fun year there. You know, I lived there for a year, and when I was going to school, I always had a ball there. And it's fun to go back to the school and see what's going on and, you know, see all these wide-eyed kids with all these dreams and aspirations. And, you know, I'm like the old hardened field general, you know what I mean? It's been through all the wars, and I'm thinking, boy, you guys don't know what you're in for, you know, kind of thing. And I was talking to a girl in the library. They decided to take my book in, you know.
Really?
Yeah, they're going to sell my book there. And I was talking to her, and she goes, yeah, you know, I'm going to do this, but I think I want to be in the front of the house because my personality is, I love people and this, that, and the other thing. And just, you know, it's such a refreshing thing to see enthusiastic, you know, youth, you know, with a plan, you know, you see a lot of college kids now. I mean, they're out protesting and whatever they're doing, you know. But these kids have a plan. There were no protests. They were just, you know, I want to be a chef or I want to be a restaurateur. I want to be a, you know, an owner or a maitre d', whatever. It's nice to see. It was just, and I'm glad, you know, some of these kids are coming into the business. I know that some aren't going to make it more than 2 years because they're in there for the wrong reasons. But, you know, the ones that do filter out. And I think the attrition rate is high. I mean, I know the six guys, there were six of us in an apartment when we were living up there. And I'm the only one that stayed in the business. You know, everybody else, one went to the fire department, one became a clammer, one was raising softshell crabs, you know, another guy's a financial planner, and one's an accountant. You know, it's crazy. But I'm the only idiot that stayed in it all these years, you know, so.
And how many years have you been in this?
In the business? I started in 1968. So I'm guessing, what would you say? That's 55 years maybe?
Wow.
The math or whatever?
Something like that.
Yeah, it's 55 years. So, yeah, I mean, I feel qualified to look at these kids and go, God, you know, I remember when I was in the same spot, you know, I couldn't wait to get out of school and start my career. I was going to be, you know, the top chef in America and all that other silly stuff that you have. But, you know, for me, it was different. I mean, I was working in kitchens way before I got to, you know, 3 years before I got to CIA. And I was always motivated by the food. I was like, I just, you know, and you got to remember, too, when I started Stu, chefs weren't superstars. You know, we were slaves in the back. I mean, it was poor lighting and poor ventilation. And
the world was different back then.
Oh, it was all kinds of hours. I mean, I can remember, you know, we did 6 days a week, 12 hours a day from the time I was 15 until I was probably about 35 or 40. And, you know, you wouldn't dare ask for a day off. You know, it was like nuts. And then, you know, even country clubs had split shifts because they didn't want to pay you all the way through. So you'd work, like, say, 10 to 2, and then you'd have to come back from 5 to 9, you know, and you had to go find something to do for 3 hours. They won't let you do that anymore. It's against the law now.
Who was the one that we had in? The guy from Oyster Bay was talking about, you know, people would be working for him and they want to take off Saturday nights.
Oh, who was that?
The gentleman from the cop, he took over some restaurants in Oyster Bay.
Oh, that was Russell, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Russ, he's a good guy. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I mean, I've had kids come up to me, you know, now, and, you know, I have to go to a party, you know, a party. You know, this is the party, dude. You know, here's the party right here. But, you know, I'm much more lenient than the guys were with me. I mean, you know, I try and work it out for them. I mean, I think you have to have a life, you know. I didn't have one. I mean, I dedicated all my time to the restaurant business and probably at the expense of family and, you know, and stuff to some degree. But that's what it is. I mean, you go into it. This is what you're going into, you know. And I don't think a lot of these kids realize that when they go to chef school. I think they think they're going to step out of chef school and be Bobby Flay or, you know, they're going to get on TV. And, you know, there's very few Bobby Flays in the world. He's a lucky guy. I mean, he was in the right place, right time. And, you know, there are a lot better chefs than Bobby. He's not, you know, that. You know, he just happened to be in the right time. And I'm not taking anything away from him. He's fine, talented guy, whatever. But, you know, there's six or seven people on TV that are doing that kind of money. I mean, Guy Fieri, you know, who's a... He's not a great chef. He's a really good guy. I've met him. He's a very nice guy, and he's exactly like he is on TV. He's not, you know, I think that's why he's successful, because it's not put on. You know, for him, that's his natural, you know, he's a humorous guy. He's witty, you know, he's fun. He's just up all the time. And, you know, he just signed an $80 million contract with Food Network, which is
how much?
Unheard of. $80
million. Wow.
Yeah, a lot of money. So, but there's, you know, there's only one of him, you know. So the chances of you doing that are very, very small. It's like, you know, going to college and playing basketball and thinking you're going to get to the NBA. I mean, that sieve is so fine. You know, it filters a lot of people out. And it's the same with cooking, you know. You're going to have kids that are going to make it big. But most of them are just going to have, you know, jobs. And, you know, maybe they'll get their own little thing at one point. But, you know, I see it all the time. I see them come out of school and I had a kid who interviewed with me one time, and he said to me, I said, well, what are you looking to do, you know? And he goes, well, I don't want the executive chef position, but I think executive sous chef is what I'd like to be. I'm like, okay, well, I'm not even sure what that is, but let's say I hire you. How are you going to be this executive sous chef with no experience? You graduated school about 10 minutes ago, you know? So he goes, well, I think my education, it allows me to, I got a degree in 3 years. And, you know, I said, okay, well, how long would you smoke an ostrich thigh for? At what temperature to get a medium rare? I don't know. Okay. How long do you think it would take you to get a glaze from 36 gallons down to, let's say, maybe a gallon and a half? I don't know. What percentage of water to sugar would you use for lemon thyme syrup? I don't know. I said, does this conversation sound as silly to you as it does to me? Because if you're an executive sous chef, whatever that is, I'm an astronaut, you know? I said, you have no idea what you're doing, and you're looking for this job. And spare me the part where you want to start at $120,000 a year, you know? So he goes to me, I guess I'm not getting a job. I said, no, you're overqualified, you know? I mean, if you would have said, teach me how to make a vinaigrette without embarrassing myself, you'd have been in whites and working already, you know? But so they come out of these schools and it just, and part of it's the school's fault. You know, they have to promise them certain things because, you know, they're getting $50,000, $60,000 a year. You know, at the end of 2 years, the kids owe $120,000, you know. What are you doing with that? I mean, I steer kids away from it to some degree because, I'll always tell a kid, listen, if your parents have enough money where it's not going to hurt, and you want to go have the college experience, by all means, go. It's fun. It's a good place. They teach you a lot of good stuff. You know, you'll get a good background. But if you're on the fence with money and money's an issue, stay with me a year. I'll send you to my friend Michael Meehan a year. He'll send you to Blake Verity for a year. And in 3 years, you'll have a much more targeted education for what you want to do. And instead of owing $120,000, you'll probably have $25,000 or $30,000 in the bank. That's a $150,000 swing I'm offering you here, you know. And some of them take it, some of them don't, whatever, you know. But there's a lot of different ways to learn the trade. You know, you don't have to go to school. I learned way more, obviously after you get out of school for sure. But even before, you know, I was with that maniac Shorty and, you know, I learned a lot about what not to do. Some of what you could do. But, you know, that's the education you get is, you know, it's almost like people don't understand. You know, I studied martial arts for a bunch of years, right? And black belt isn't the culmination. It's the beginning. The black belt means, okay, now you have enough information to be dangerous. Now you can start really learning the cool stuff, you know. And it's the same thing with school. You know, you'll see a lot of stuff up at CIA. But most of the kids up there, you know, a lot of them, it's a college experience. You know, they're drinking beer with their buddies, smoking weed, whatever they're doing, you know. And, yeah, you go to class, and, yeah, it's serious, and you learn some things. But you come out of there, you're not a chef when you come out of there. I mean, you're about to start to learn. You have enough background material to be dangerous, and you're going to hook up, hopefully, with a talented guy or a few of them and then start building your repertoire and your career. But it's I see them going in there for all the wrong reasons, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that Food Network is on TV, and, you know, it's, you know, the whole interest in food and restaurants and whatever has exploded, so... you know, I remember as a kid, I think I was in maybe three or four restaurants until I was working in them. You know, my parents didn't go out to eat. They didn't have any money for that. You know, you get some pizza once in a while. Every once in a while, we go to a Chinese restaurant or like something down on the water if it was a Mother's Day celebration or something like that. But we didn't go much. These kids eat out all the time. I mean, my daughter's got, she hasn't eaten home either, you know, and she's got a family, you know, whatever. But they're constantly taking stuff in or, you know, running out to the restaurant, stopping after the kids have baseball games or whatever. It's a completely different culture now. You know? So I don't know where the industry is going. Getting back to my original premise of the restaurant model is dying. It's just I think it's changing and evolving. And I think the people that recognize that and evolve with it will survive. And people who don't won't, you know. You know, evolution has a way of shaking out the weak and, you know, rewarding the strong. So we'll see what happens. But anyway, I think we got to take a little break and sell some commercial time here, Stu. Let's take a little break and we'll come back and we'll chat some more.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shawdell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.
You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI AM and 104.7 WHLI FM. Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show with your host, Tom Shawdell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
Going back to CIA brought back so many memories and such good times. You know, it's almost like, you know, when you're there, you can't wait to get out. Once you're out, you wish you were back. It's like being in the Army or something, you know. Oh, this sucks, you know. And then you get out and you go, boy, that was fun, you know. All you remember is the good times. You don't remember all the bad times, you know. But it gives you perspective on your career. And I was saying to the guys, I said, you know, we graduated in 73. It's 2023. It's 50 years ago. I said, can you imagine, remember when you were in high school, we graduated in 71? Can you imagine talking to somebody who graduated high school in 1921? I mean, that's the equivalency. You know, I mean, you don't think of yourself as this old, dilapidated bastard, you know?
Well, you're saying a mouthful because... here we are in 2023.
Yeah.
And I said, wow, what was life in the 1900s? Just, if I'm not mistaken, cars were just starting to be around and things were really different. And that was only in 125 years. What about like way back when? I mean, oh my God, it's just, so much has changed in 125 years. That much more has changed since biblical times.
Oh yeah, no. And life is spinning at a rate now, warp speed. You know, I remember talking to my grandfather lived till he was 101, right? And I went down to see him. He was probably in his late 90s or middle 90s at the time. He had this grapefruit tree in the back, you know. So he said to me, "Come on outside. I want to check on my grapefruit tree." So I go outside, right? And he said to me, you know, last year I had 675 pieces of grapefruit. This year it looks like it's not going to be as well as many, maybe about 575. But hopefully next year I can get 700 grapefruits. I'm sitting there with my fingers in my eyes going, listen, Pop, as interesting as this grapefruit thing is, you know, it just occurred to me, you saw the entire century front to back. And he goes, yeah. I said, so what's the biggest mind cramp for you? I mean, is it nuclear fission? Is it, you know, I mean, you've seen, you know, the advent of the telephone and, you know, it's crazy, right? He goes, no, you know, he says, you know what the hardest thing for me to understand is? The value of money. I said, really? He goes, yeah, you know, he says, when I bought my house, it was, you know, I paid $9,000 for my house in Flushing. He says, now a starter home in Levittown's $500,000. He couldn't figure it out, you know, just couldn't get it. He says, my mother used to give me 50 cents and I'd have to make two trips to the grocery store to bring the stuff back because I couldn't carry it all in one bag, you know. I'm like, wow, you know, and it's like, really, it was almost, you know, he goes, and he related a lot of stuff to baseball. And he goes, you know, when did a shortstop batting 240 become worth $10 million a year, you know? Because back when he was a kid, I mean, they were playing for dimes. I mean, it was just, you know, they were playing, they all had regular jobs. Baseball was a part-time thing, you know. So he just couldn't get that all down. And I won't live to be 100, especially with my lifestyle. But, you know, the bottom line is, you know, I hope to get to 80, you know. But you think of the things that we've seen, you know. I mean, you know, the rotary phones and you know, pay toilets.
But even going telephone back booths. To lifestyle, bring me back to reality. I know that growing up in Oceanside, when I was like 10 years old, I don't think there was shopping on Sundays.
No, there wasn't.
I believe stores were closed.
Always closed. And Roosevelt Field was closed.
And then they started opening, and I vaguely remember a store in Oceanside that sort of was roped off some of the store because they couldn't sell that at that time. I don't know what the deal was. I mean, supermarkets must have been open and grocery stores.
Yeah, no, the retail stores weren't open. I mean, the shopping malls were closed. I mean, they started reopening. They started opening on it was like really in the late 60s, early 70s when they started that.
And then in today's world, you know, Thanksgiving night stores are open. Although I think they're paring that back, right?
Yeah, I don't know. It's really weird, you know. I mean, the merchandising is, you know, my friend Jimmy, who slaughters the English language, I got to publish his stuff because my friend Jimmy could write Norm Crosby's material. Norm Crosby was a comedian. He used to just, his whole routine was screwing up the English language. And my friend Jimmy's the same way. He's great. At some point, I'm going to compile them all. I write them down on my phone whenever I hear them. But he said to me, he said, you know, the other day, he goes, I was walking through the, you know, the mall and you know, they're advertising for Christmas already. Pretty soon they're going to have that guy with the bell from the Starvation Army out there. And I said, the what? He says, the Starvation Army. I thought I heard it wrong, but I didn't, it turns out. So I had to write that one on the phone, you know what I mean, Starvation Army. But it's true. It's like, you know, it used to be, you know, they would wait for the Christmas stuff at least till after Thanksgiving. Now it's like before Halloween. They're starting with the, you know, Mariah Carey's, you know, she's pimping out her Christmas album already or whatever. It's just nuts, you know. The merchandising is nuts. But I think that whole thing with the stores closing is when they started, you know, they're trying to move God out of society for all these years, you know. And I think that was part of it because Sunday was kind of sacrosanct. But even so, even you couldn't, I remember on Election Day, you couldn't sell booze before the polls closed. And it was... Yeah, you couldn't sell liquor on Election Day in a restaurant or a store until after the polls closed at 8 o'clock.
Wow.
I mean, you'd be better off drunk most of the time with the candidates that we have now. You know what I mean? I think a good cocktail is probably in order. But, yeah, you weren't allowed to, you know, serve liquor. And you couldn't serve liquor before noon on Sundays because I guess it interfered with church or, you know, whatever. Yeah, but all those laws have gone by the wayside, you know. They don't care anymore. Nobody cares, you know. But yeah, we've become this, you know, materialistic, you know. I think Sunday was a day that, you know, everybody kind of stopped and thought about family or, you know, religion or whatever you did on Sundays, you know, football. You know, it was kind of a day to just relax and kind of leave all of that stuff for the rest of the week. You know, maybe sit around and be introspective or something. Now it's just flat-out merchandising. It's, you know, malls and, you know, everything's open 7 days a week.
The world has changed.
There you go. Thank you, Nostradamus. Yeah, the restaurant world to me is really at a, I think, at a crossroads. And, you know, I hate to see it because, you know what? I just met our friend Bill.
Bill O'Leary?
Yeah, I think it's his birthday today or tomorrow.
Really?
Happy birthday, Bill. If it's belated, so be it. If it's tomorrow, we're early. So anyway, happy birthday. But yeah, I think it's at a crossroads. I think that it's you're gonna see a shaken out period like we haven't seen before, and it's happening all the time. I see it on Facebook. You know, restaurant closures. There was a guy who just closed two sandwich shops, and he said, you know, in the beginning, you know, you're always looking to, you know, it's understandable if you lose a little money, you got to get going. He says, but at some point, you just have to realize that you're not making enough, you know, and he just shut him down. And it's sad to see. To me, it's, you know, an obituary, and, you know, I feel a little bit of pain for everybody who has ever gone through the restaurant business and had to close them. I mean, they're just, it's a painful thing. I mean, I've had like 24 or something like that over the years, and I had two go down on me. And it was hard. It was hard to walk away. I mean, the one in East Hampton, you know, we kind of lost it when the stock market crashed. And, you know, you try and try and try and try and rescue it. And, you know, I think one of the greatest lessons I learned about that was when to just cut and run and just say, you know what, enough is enough, rather than trying to rescue the thing and making a bad situation worse. And then one of Syosset, you know, we had that Evo over where I was partners with the Scottos. Now it's a CVS. It was right in town. And it was the oddest. I never saw anything like it, Stu. I was like, we were very busy when we opened. And after the Labor Day weekend, it just fell off the cliff and never recovered. And I still, to this day, don't know why. I mean, there were parking issues or whatever. You know, I understand that. But it was, we were doing X amount of, you know, business, and everything was great, and we're kicking along. It's a lot of fun. And all of a sudden, after Labor Day weekend, we were doing X amount of business minus 50%, and it never recovered. And I never really knew why. It was just one of the oddest things I ever saw. So it is what it is, you know. It's a very, very fickle business, and it's not for the faint-hearted. I have a friend of mine who I, you know, went to CIA with, who I got together with the other night, and he goes, can I have my friend call you? And I'm like, yeah, why? He goes, he's 70 years old, and he's thinking of using his retirement money to open a restaurant. I'm thinking, oh, no, don't do that, dude, you know. That's some scary stuff right there, you know. I said, yeah, I'd be happy to talk to him. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, people don't want to hear the message. It's, you know, don't, you know, confuse me with the facts. Tell me what I want to hear, you know. And, you know, I don't want to be the dream crusher for people, but most of them don't know the realities of it. And especially if you're not in it. I think the guy was a lawyer or something and whatever. And it's like, well, why would you, you know, I understand the sexiness part of it. You know, everybody sees it from the outside. It's a sexy business. It's, you know, everybody wants to own a restaurant, stand in the front, hand out menus, shake hands, you know, talk to people, buy them a drink. It's a lot of fun, you know. But that's only about 3% of what goes on. You know, the rest of it, the other 97% is what you got to watch out for. And it's what they don't know. And, you know, I was advising a guy who opened up a place, and he told me he seemed to think that he was going to be very busy because he had another business across the street. And that was going to keep the restaurant full all the time. And I'm like, dude, you can't even survive on one zip code, never mind one business. I mean, you got to be kidding me, you know. But he made a lot of money in another business. And, you know, successful people are smart generally. And, you know, they think they know it. And you know, everybody's eating in a restaurant. I don't know if I ever told you the story, but I had a partner, Mike Buffer, who was a great guy. He made a lot of money in real estate development, and he was a dentist. He had 3 or 4 offices. And I never had more fun with a guy in my life than him. He was a hoot, you know. But he said to me one time, we were opening a restaurant together, and he says, I want to do this one on my own. I don't need any help from you. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah. I said, but, you know, I'll be here when you screw this up. You know, just call me, you know. So he goes, no, you don't know how much I know about restaurants. I said, really? You know a lot about restaurants? He goes, yeah. I said, you're a dentist, you know. Would I pull a tooth? No. You know, I know something about teeth pulling. I've had 3 or 4 pulled, you know. So he goes to me, I've eaten in every important restaurant in the United States and Europe, probably 8 or 10 times. And it was true. He's a wealthy guy. He used to fly all over just to eat in restaurants, right? And I said, okay, I'll give you some perspective. I've flown to Los Angeles probably 10 times. I've never landed the plane. There's a big difference between flying somewhere and flying somewhere. And there's a big difference between eating in a restaurant and owning and running a restaurant, you know. So he opened up Eli's, and we all know what happened there.
So I might sound like a broken record today because I was talking about rooftop dining down in Florida.
Yeah.
But I've been to a couple of concerts over at Madison Square Garden, and there's a hotel around the corner, the Renaissance Hotel. It's part of the Marriott. I believe it was on 35th between 7th and 8th.
Uh-huh.
And they have a rooftop dining area called Versa.
Uh-huh.
And we were there a couple of weeks ago. We had a great time, nice offering of cocktails and food. And then we were there last week, and it was funny. There was we get off the elevator, and there's a group of people around a round table, sort of part of it. It was like a booth,
yeah.
And they're tasting. It looked like rack of lamb, lamb chops on a couscous, and they're talking about how. Really analyze. It would be like you, like, reviewing it. And I said, I'm sold. What is it on the menu? I have to have that. And the gentleman calls me over and doesn't really explain who he is, but he gives me a fork. He goes, I promise this fork hasn't been used. And you have to taste it.
Yeah.
And I said, this is unbelievable. It was couscous with, it had, I guess, squash in it and some other things. But it was just the most bizarre scenario. Then it turns out that he was the, I guess, the general manager, actually, of the restaurant.
Uh-huh.
And I said that I work with you or whatever, and we do the radio show. And he goes, well, you're going to have to, you know, you're going to have some of this with your meal. So it was funny. So I don't know how he found us, but I guess the restaurant wasn't that big.
Yeah.
And sure enough, the waiter brings over a large plate with the couscous. My friends were quick to say, where's the lamb chops?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But everybody tried it, and it was delightful. And then the gentleman came over, and he brought, like, all these different management people. One was, like, in charge of corporate management of the hotel and this, that, and the other. But they were just so excited that, you know, somebody was paying attention to what they were doing. And actually what they were doing, I also met the chef, and they were looking at – they were auditioning new items for the menu, essentially.
Sure, yeah.
So being able to talk to the chef and you know, explain how good it was. And I forget I believe – the gentleman's name, the general manager's name was Omar, and I think he said that he was Turkish. So it had a little bit of
Middle Eastern flair to it. Yeah.
But it was just incredible, and it was just, I don't know, you think that the city can be cold and just nondescript. And yet it was like, you know, meeting somebody and having him just continue the conversation throughout the evening was really, really cool. And I was able to give kudos to our friend that actually works for the hotel, because the truth is she was like an advocate of the restaurant. If we didn't go there the first time with them, we wouldn't have known to go back.
Sure, yeah.
And so it's really cool that just in life, if you love what you do and you live your career, I guess you're blessed.
You are. And, you know, listen, I'm the embodiment of that statement. I mean, you know, I turned two bad habits into a career, eating and drinking, you know. Who's having more fun than I am? But, you know, it's funny you say that. I mean, I'm really big on hospitality, and I think that, you know, there was this whole thing in the city, and probably the American Revolution for me started in 1983. It didn't start in 1776. That's when the whole American food revolution started. And you know, we got away from that whole snooty, haughty French attitude. And the Americans, you know, always take everything down to its bare bones and rebuild it, you know, in their own image. And we did that. But there was a time in like the late 90s or middle 90s where the snootiness at the hostess desk was kind of looked on as a badge of honor for these higher-end places, you know. And I can't tell you how many snooty hostesses and hosts I've run into over the years, because I'm in restaurants all the time. And to me, you know, I'm not intimidated by that because, you know, I'm a restaurant guy, so, you know, I know how to get around that, whatever. But, you know, I'm sure a lot of people were victims of that. And it's nice to hear that, you know, a guy like you're describing comes over and he's friendly and he's fun and he's, you know, hey, check this out, and, you know, we're trying new stuff. And, I mean, it's what it's about. It's supposed to be about fun. You're supposed to be going out, you know, and I remember years ago when I was studying guitar like a maniac, you know, I was putting in hours and hours and hours and I couldn't get certain things. It was just driving me crazy. And my teacher said, Tom, it's called playing guitar. It's not called working guitar. Just play it. Have some fun. For God's sake, don't put so much pressure on yourself, you know? And it's the same thing with this. It's like, you know, we're not saving lives here, man. This is just food. You know, you're going to do this two more times today and three more times tomorrow and the day after and the day after that. So if you had a great meal, you know, high five the guy that made it. And if you had a less than great meal, you know, okay, so the next time, you know, maybe not to order that dish or whatever. It's not life and death, you know? And some of these, you know, places that have, you know, big reputations or whatever, I think they kind of, you know, they had that ego attitude or whatever that I found so off-putting. I remember going to one of John George's places in the city in, was downtown, and they had a hostess there that wouldn't even look you in the eye. You know, she was staring over your shoulder, you know, looking past you, you know, and one word answers, and just, you know, and finally I said, you know what, you're just rude. You're not cool. You're rude, you know. And she get what? I said, you're rude. You're being rude, you know. Nobody buys this routine that you're putting on here. And she kind of calmed down and said, I'm sorry, you know, just distracted, whatever, you know. You call them out, you know, just call them out on it. I think that, you know, that whole thing is totally unnecessary. I can eat anywhere I want, you know. I choose to come here because I want to eat the food. Just let me in. Stop being a jerk, you know. But I think that, you know, I think that attitude has changed considerably, especially since everybody's fighting for every nickel now. You know, I mean, it's just restaurant business is notoriously difficult. Everybody knows that, but it's more so now than ever before. And I'm saddened by it because it's a business I love and, you know, I'll always be connected to. But I'm trying to figure out how to make it work again, you know. I mean, I have the two restaurants out east and you know, I mean, they're fine. They're doing okay. But I'm wondering, should I rework one? Should I think about this differently? I don't know. It's one of the few times in my restaurant life where I'm kind of unsure of where I'm going, you know, with it. And it's an uncomfortable position. It's probably going to, you know, on one hand, it'll make me think and make me react and see where I can, you know, I can improve it. On the other hand, it's a little frightening because it's like everything I know to be true is all of a sudden not true. So I don't know. I don't know which way to go with it. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I'll figure it out, I'm sure, you know, just like everybody else will. But, you know, it's a scary time for restaurants. It really is.
It is. That be said, when I look at the calendar, before you know it, it's Thanksgiving.
It's coming up.
And
should we do a show next week about Thanksgiving food?
I think so. Again, one of the highlights of my life was coming to visit you at your club, and I always have memory problems, but it's the Mill River Club?
Mill River, yeah.
There you go. And we came in and we videoed you preparing three side dishes.
Yes, I remember.
If I can recollect.
I got to tell you, if that's the highlight of your life, you got to get out more.
Well, it you know, I guess life is a cornucopia.
It was fun, yeah.
And, you know, I think you did some interesting things because I think the one was carrots. There might have been tricolor, cauliflower,
yeah.
and something else. And I actually cooked one of those. But it was really cool to see you in your environment. You know, over at Jewel in the day, even though you were more like the orchestra.
Yeah, it's Leonard Bernstein.
You were in front of the
as a conductor.
The kitchen. Yeah. But it was fun watching you. But here I was like, in the trench with you. It was really, really cool.
It's where I prefer to be, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not the general that sits back and says, "Take that hill, boys." You know, I'm charging up the hill with the rest.
The
of
only them. Thing missing with that memory is, you know, you were doing the, you just look cool at what you were doing, flipping the food in the skillet, but. You know, if only you would have had a glass of wine in the other hand as you did that. That would have been my vision.
We'll have to redo the filming. Well, listen, I don't have a glass of wine in my hand right now, but we got to get out of here because we're running out of time, Stu. So.
Okay, but we do promise to have a Thanksgiving show.
Yeah, we'll do that next week. That'd be fun. All right, so we're going to close the show with Tom's Three Keys to Life. Like usual, life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza. And we'll see you next week, God willing.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shawdell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.